This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Break is brought to you by Bluehost. Great value if you need a place for your blog or website. It's cheap, lots of features, and very easy to set up. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And buy my book, Geek Priest, Confessions of a New Media Pioneer. Buy it at the Amazon store and click on the link on our website before you do that, and your purchase will help support our show. This show is also made possible by the friends of SQPN. Join us in our mission to reach out to the ends of the world with engaging and inspiring programs by supporting us with a monthly donation. Go to sqpn.com/donate for more information. This is The Break, episode number 927, recorded on July 19, 2014. From the Simpsons to the Sacraments, from technology to theology, this show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, the trends and the tradition. So wherever you are and whatever you're doing, it is time for a break. Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Break, coming to you from a very warm Amersfoort. It is a heat wave, actually. It's a tropical day, as they call it here. I wonder what they call a tropical day in the tropics, because it's always tropical weather. Would they call it like an extra tropical day? I don't know. Anyway, tropical weather. It's 30 degrees, perhaps even 35 degrees Celsius here in the studio. It's very hot, and the only way to survive is to stay calm and to not move and to have a fan blowing at me from my right side. And I hope it's not blowing too much into the microphone. And I've got the windows open, so sometimes you might hear some noise coming from outside. But I'm still going to try to do a show. After all, podcasting is about a certain rhythm, certainly. And there's certainly a lot to talk about today, starting, of course, with the airplane disaster over Ukraine. I'm sure you've heard the news. Flight MH17 was probably, and the investigation, of course, is still ongoing, is probably shot down over Ukraine, a country that is currently in war. And in total, 298 people died. What makes this extra dramatic for my country is that among those 298 people who died were 193 people from my country. It's surreal to hear that. The airplanes left Amsterdam, so Schiphol Airport, and was heading for Malaysia, I think. And it was just a regular flight. I mean, I've seen footage on one of the websites, one of the news sites, that showed a video that someone made on a phone and posted it probably just before takeoff. And you see a plane, I think it's a Boeing 777. It's one of those planes that I've been in many times, and nothing, really nothing, makes you suspect that anything will go wrong. It's just a regular airline flight. The people are tourists. They're going on a trip, going to see their relatives. Some were going home, but most people were going on vacation with plans, and they were looking forward to it. And the atmosphere that you see in that short video clip is very much the same like I've experienced so many times when I went on big trips. And I've been traveling in the same direction when I went to Australia, to China. I wouldn't be surprised if the plane that I was on took more or less the same itinerary. So it's so surreal to realize that that same plane with these same people that you see in that short video clip has been shot down, is completely destroyed, and that all these people, including the pilots and the airline personnel, all dead, and 193 Dutch people as well, people from Australia, people from the UK. There, it's just, it's crazy. And the thing is, the news broke on another very hot day. Everybody was outside. There was a very summer-like atmosphere here in the Netherlands. Everybody was enjoying the nice weather. People were swimming and walking. And then they came home after a really nice day, and then they hear that news. It's just something that doesn't sink in. And in the beginning, you don't have images. Well, you do have some footage that was shot again with iPhone cameras, I suppose, but not much else. And so it's just numbers, and you don't know faces, you don't know who is on board. Of course, a lot of people immediately had great anxiety if they knew that people that they knew, friends or family, were planning on going in that direction. So immediately there was a lot of anxiety, who was on board. And then the strange thing is that the more, let's say, that time progresses, this is now the third day, the more we get to know these people that were on board. You see the photos, you hear the stories, you get the testimonies from their family and relatives. I mean, parents lost their children. Children lost their parents, grandparents lost their kids and their grandchildren. It's colleagues lost their friends. It's all these stories are now starting to emerge. You see the photos, and that's, for me at least, that it starts to sink in. And I'm pretty sure that as time progresses, this will get even worse. And so it's very different from, let's say, a disaster like 9/11, where a lot of people were watching that live, and it was in the middle of New York, and there is, let's say, this vicious aggression of the images. We didn't have that with this airline disaster. Whereas, you know, percentage-wise, this is the same kind of disaster for the Netherlands as 9/11 was for the United States. If you look at the size of the country, the number of inhabitants, and the number of people who died, this is perhaps even bigger for our country, percentage. We're a very, very tiny country. So it's difficult to process, and also difficult to emotionally kind of wrap your. I'm not even sure if you can wrap your brain emotionally around something, but to feel the true impact, the true meaning of what happened there, I think it will take a couple more days, and you have to, you know, get to know these people to be truly able to empathize. In the meantime, what you can do is pray, and the, let's say, the natural reaction is to pray for your fellow Dutchman. But then, as people pointed out on Twitter to me, is like, you know, every life is just as valuable. So don't just pray for the Dutch. Also pray for all these other victims and their families. And that is, of course, totally true. I guess it's the closer it is to home, the more you empathize. And now that I've read some stories about other people who died, I mean, there was a religious sister from Australia who died on the plane. You hear the testimonies of her fellow sisters. There were young people from the UK. I've read some of those testimonies. That's when you start to realize that the photos of the wreckage that you see, and it's gruesome. I mean, everything is completely flattened and destroyed and burned. That's those same remains carried just, you know, a few days ago, the lives of so many people like you and I. And again, it's just surreal to realize that I've been on flights like that so many times. There's not a single moment that you think that something like this can happen. And then, of course, there are all the political implications and all the debate going on, and everybody's pointing to everyone, and it's almost distracting. It's almost irritating to have that discussion. There needs to be this discussion, of course, but it takes away from the true core of the tragedy, which is basically that war kills innocent people. And this is not just going on in Ukraine. This is going on in Israel and Gaza right now. It's going on in so many other countries in the world, where people fight, where there's war, everybody loses. There is no way to bring about peace through war, at least not true peace. And it's something that Pope Francis has been insisting on so much this past year. It's like, have the courage to stop fighting and to talk to each other instead of using weapons to destroy each other. And he's very critical of the weapon industry that is making so much money by fueling these wars, by providing all the parties with the technology and the weaponry to continue these conflicts. It is, I think, a very important voice that we can fortunately amplify by retweeting the tweets of the Pope, by paying attention, by posting these stories on our Facebook feed, etc. I know it's not much, and it might even feel like sometimes like slacktivism, where you think you do something, but it's actually, you know, slacktivism. So it's you know, it's just posting something on your Facebook feed. How much is that truly contributing to a better world? Well, you know what? I think it's all about awareness. And the more we amplify that appeal to mankind, stop fighting, don't pay back if someone hurts you, don't hurt that person back, be courageous enough to be the first one to stop fighting and to start talking. If we can amplify that, even if it's just a little bit, altogether, it might actually change something. That's what I hope, and I need to keep hoping in situations like this. We all need to keep hoping. We cannot let the horrific crimes of some people take away our hope for the future and our belief that ultimately God created us to be good and gave us a heart that is able of loving and forgiving. And that is a heart that in some cases is completely hardened and forgotten, but we all have that capability. Even the worst offenders, the worst criminals, they all have that free will and that potential to convert and to see the gravity of what they did and to change their ways. And that is what we need to pray for. That's another thing that we can do. If you believe, we can pray, and we know and we trust that God hears these prayers and that it's not in vain that we pray. We might not see the results that we would like to have or at the time that we would like to have them, but then again, we are not God, right? The only thing that we can do is to pray, and prayer does one thing immediately, and that is it changes us. It opens our heart. If we pray for an end to violence and war, that does something with my heart in my personal life and hopefully will make me over time a more peaceful, forgiving human being. Yes, I know. I'm just one person among I don't know how many billion people live on this planet. But if I don't change and no one else is changing, thinking that, you know, what does it matter? The world is not going to change. But if I change, I think there is a power that will even transmit through that kind of invisible solidarity that we have as brothers and sisters that all have one common Father in heaven. I think that if I change and I become a peaceful person, then that will affect over time the fate of our world. That is what I believe. So it's a strange day to podcast, I have to be honest, and to talk about other topics than this. It all seems so kind of irrelevant, non-important. What can we talk about? It's like just before I started to record, I was just playing some music, and I played a playlist of summertime songs, and it was the Beach Boys, and then I realized, you know what? This actually is not very appropriate music. It's way too cheerful, and on a day like this, shouldn't I be playing like very heavy duty classical music or something like that? But that wouldn't that be fake? I don't know. It's hard. It's always difficult. And I'll have to try to find the right tone in our celebrations this weekend as well. As you know, I record this on a Saturday. So tonight and tomorrow I have three masses in total, and you can bet that a lot of people will come to church to pray in this situation are distraught. And so what are you going to do? What are you going to say? You have to give it a place in the liturgy, and so I've been thinking about that a little bit, and I think the best place for this would be the the common prayers that we have. It's right in the heart of the liturgy. It is after the homily and the profession of our faith, the creed. It's before we start the liturgy of the Eucharist. And it's the moment that we literally raise our hearts to God and ask Him to come to our aid. And that might be the best moment to stop and to pray. And what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to find three candles and have three prayers. One for the victims of this airline crash, but also for the victims of war on the ground there in Ukraine and in Israel and Gaza and all these other countries. So a prayer for the victims. We'll light one candle, and then I'll let the church be silent for a minute. So just pure silence. It's something that we don't have enough of in our liturgies anyway. So, and then the second candle could be for all the family members, the relatives, the friends of those who died, the people that are mourning. It's a candle with which we can express our hope that God will be that light in their lives, that strong rock underneath their feet. And followed by silence, and then the third candle, I think, should be for peace. Peace in Ukraine, peace in the Holy Land, peace everywhere, because it's ultimately these horrors are the result of war. And war is based on hatred and envy and frustration and everything that comes from a heart that is not filled with love. And so that third prayer could be for peace in the world and peace in our own lives. And I hope that in that way we can honor those who died, we can pray for those who survived and have to cope with this tragic loss, and that hopefully our prayer will bring about peace ultimately. We should not give up. And then of course we will all do that with the intercession of Mary, the Virgin Mary, who is also called the Queen of Peace. She knows what suffering is. She saw her own son die on the cross, and she knows what grief is, what mourning is, and we can ask for her prayers as well. She is a very, very powerful intercessor to pray for all those intentions. Right. Again, it's kind of hard to move away from this topic and talk about what else, happens in the world and the things that are on my list. Let me tell you a little bit about what I did this past week. As you might have seen, if you follow me on Facebook and Twitter, I went to France for a couple of days. I left on Monday morning, very early in the morning. I had to wake up at 5 in the morning, go to Amsterdam. And then I didn't fly, but I took the train. There are these high-speed trains, very advanced technology. It was developed in the 90s, I think. And these high-speed trains go like 3 times as fast as a car. So you can go from Amsterdam to Paris in a little more than 3 hours, which is really fast. Normally it would take you at least 5 hours, not even counting, you know, the traffic jams around Paris and everything. So I took the train, which brought me to the heart of Paris, the northern station. And from there I took the underground, the metro, to record a number of audio reports or audio documentaries. This is still for my Tour de France project. These are the last episodes that I needed to record, because we will have our last broadcast on Saturday, next Saturday, actually, Saturday evening. And the day after will be the final part of the Tour de France, which will end right underneath the Arc de Triomphe on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. What I didn't realize when we organized this trip was that July the 14th, le 14 juillet, as they call it in France, is Bastille Day. So it commemorates the revolutionary attack on the Bastille, on the big prison. It is a national feast day, and it is commemorated by the French with a huge military parade around the Arc de Triomphe. And I happened to have to record my first item at the Arc de Triomphe, because that's where there will be the medal ceremony for the winners of the tour. And so that would be the opener for the program. And then I had two other reports that I needed to record. One is in a church that is actually also in the center. It's not far from the Ile de France. It's this small island in the middle of the river, the Seine. So not far from the Notre Dame the Notre Dame Cathedral. And there is a community of monks that live there in the heart of the city. Part-time monks, actually quite special. It's the community of Jerusalem. These people want to live a contemplative life in silence with beautiful liturgy, very much inspired by the Byzantine liturgy, beautiful chants. But they also still, they kept their jobs. A lot of these monks were working in companies before they received the call and continue to do so half of the time. It's the way in which they make their living. But it's also for them a way to evangelize the city. They want to be that praying presence, that monastic presence in the heart of Paris. It's a very special community. So I went there for my first report, and then the second report was something totally different. It was in the southern part of the city, which was it's just a parish next to one of the biggest refuges for homeless people and young people that for whatever reason have derailed and are in trouble. More than 500 beds, more than 1,000 meals are given away there every day. And there was this very old priest from Holland originally, but he's been living in France, I think, for more than 60 years. He was over 80. I think he must have been 85 years old. Incredibly strong man. Short of breath, unfortunately, so he couldn't show me around. But instead, I had the director of the organization show me the whole place. But amazing stories. And what I loved about that particular place was that they said, for us, and this is something that goes back to the very beginning of this refuge, this is more than 100 years old. They started doing this a century ago when that part of Paris was very poor. And it's now grown into this huge organization. But it still follows the same rules. So at the time, there were also people that were, I think, workers, and they were exploited. And so they were rebelling against those factories at the time, and so they were sought after by the police. And then the person who the Catholic businessman who started this refuge thought it was extremely important to let people be anonymous so that the police wouldn't know their names, because nobody asked for their names. And that's still what they do today. So that place is open for anyone. They never ask your name. They don't ask you if you're a Catholic or what your walk in life is. If you're hungry, if you need a place to sleep, if you need care, if your feet are swollen or rotting even, and you need medical attention, we'll give it to you for free, and we'll never ask anything in return, not even your identity. And that's what they do. And the director of the place told me that around 200 people walk in every day next to the, let's say, the usual residents there, and they don't know who they are. They might be refugees. They might be people that are staying in France illegally. But he said, we never ask. We don't care. This is just a person in need, and who am I to need to know anything but how I can help this person? It's laudable. More than 200 volunteers work there. It was very, very impressive. So those are the stories that I recorded in Paris. And unfortunately, only stayed one night and had to go back the day after. So it was quite a race against the clock. Actually, it was truly a race when I had to get back to the station and catch my train back, because the last report was with this refuge, and especially the Dutch priest, 85 years old, had stories to tell, and he just couldn't stop telling these stories. And I was way too polite to interrupt him, so I had to literally run for it. Yeah, it was quite a challenge, but I made it home safely. Now, in the evening, this was really, really great. I met with Pierre, and Pierre is a good friend. Let's say he's among the dinosaurs of podcasting. When I started the Catholic Insider, podcasting from Rome, Pierre started to podcast from Canada. That's where he lived. But he's originally from Paris, and he moved back with his family to Paris. We stayed in touch for a long, long time, but I never met him since he came back to France. And so on July the 14th, for the first time since I don't know how many years, we met up again, and it was great. It was really, really cool. And he and his wife took me to see the fireworks. That's also always the traditional way to end that day. There are huge fireworks around the Eiffel Tower. And now, we didn't go to the Eiffel Tower itself because apparently it's super crowded. There are tens of thousands of people, and you won't get home anymore once you are there. Instead, we watched it from the new bridge, Le Pont Neuf, one of the bridges over the river, which accidentally is the oldest bridge in Paris, even though it's called the New Bridge. And from there, you see it very far away in the distance, but nevertheless, it was very impressive, and it was fun to watch those fireworks with thousands of other inhabitants of Paris on that bridge, and it was just a very festive atmosphere. It was really, really cool. Now, Pierre Journel also told me about his current business that he's building up, and because I kind of lost track of what exactly he did when he was not podcasting. So he told me he's a huge guitar aficionado, and very, very knowledgeable. I remember seeing his room in Canada, and it was just plastered with these great looking guitars. So he's building a channel for other guitar aficionados, and he is promoting these backstage passes that people can buy for, what is it, five euros a month or something like that, a really, really low price. And in exchange for that, you get access to master classes, to a community. So it's this whole entrepreneurship that you see also with Cliff Ravenscraft over at GSPN and so many other people nowadays that have turned what a lot of people look down upon as a hobby, you know, the podcasting and the live streaming, etc., into a business. And I think what both Cliff and Pierre and some other people do very well is to dare to target a niche, or a niche, if you want. So to not try to reach everyone with everything, but to go after a certain group of people that are just as passionate as you are about a certain hobby, about music in this case, about podcasting in the case of Cliff, and then see if that community can also support you and support your family. And I think that is, we will see a lot of these businesses get very big and succeed, because it's passion that makes it stand apart from all the professional initiatives that you have all over the internet. It's that personal relationship, I think, that is golden and that you can't find in the, let's say, the professional business world. So I think there will always be a place for initiatives like this. So it's let's see. He gave me actually a link to his guitar channel if you want to check it out, if you are into guitars. And he's, by the way, before you think it's all in French, no, Pierre, since he lived in Canada, is perfectly bilingual. So he does all his content both in English and in France. So he gave me a link to that guitar channel. It's theguitarchannel.biz if you want to take a look. So theguitarchannel.biz. It's very interesting to see how that will how that will continue to evolve, and inspiring for me as well, because of course I'm always thinking about ways to expand the reach of these programs that we do with SQPN, the things that I'm doing in the Netherlands, the things, the projects that I'm working on right now and that I can't really talk about yet. But it's in the same vein. It's about how can we create communities around content, and how can we make that self-sustainable without going, you know, fully commercial. I think that that's a delicate balance, but it is possible, and guys like Pierre and guys like Cliff show that. So if you want to find the go to the show notes over at thebreak.sqpn.com for the link to Pierre's guitar website. And with that, I think it is time to go to the world of movies and TV shows. So I have been watching a few movies, mostly here at home. It's too warm to go to the movies, really. And I'm currently kind of debating whether or not I should keep my flat fee subscription to my local theater. Because in the beginning, I watched a lot of movies. But nowadays, you know, I might watch one or two movies a month. And that is the same price as it costs me on a monthly basis. So I don't know if I should keep it. It's kind of, I'm currently break even, but if I watch even less movies, then it will be a little bit too expensive, I think. So I'm on the fence. When I took that subscription, we didn't have Netflix in the Netherlands. Now that we have Netflix, there is just so much good stuff on Netflix. You know, why go to the movies? It's only for the, let's say, the 3D blockbusters and everything. But even on that level, I don't know if I'm getting jaded or too old, or there are not just that many good movies anymore, but I don't really mind not seeing the latest blockbuster in 3D. I can totally wait for that to appear on Netflix or get it on DVD or on Blu-ray later on. It's and the 3D, it's nice, but most movies that I watched this year in 3D, almost all of them, after seeing it, I would have been totally content having watched that in 2D. The 3D is nice, but it doesn't really add. And it's funny, your memory, my memory at least, I don't know about your memory, but my memory is not 3D. If I think back of a movie, I have trouble remembering whether I watched it in 3D or in 2D. So it's something that it just adds a little thrill in the moment, but afterwards, you have exactly the same memory. You remember the story, you remember the images, but I don't remember 3D. I don't know how that works, actually. Is it possible to think back of events in your life and replay it in your mind in 3D? I know that some people have a visual memory, like my brother. He has a photographic memory. He can describe you the room in which he was walking around like 5 years ago on that exact date. It's incredible. I'm the total opposite. I remember stories, I remember faces, but I don't remember situations. And I could certainly not describe places where I've been in great detail. But I still wonder, with people with that photographic memory, if they are able to see those memories of places in 3D or not. I don't think so. I wonder, because we've got two eyes, but we've got one brain. So, interesting. Interesting thought. But as you know, I'm fascinated by 3D and by 3D technology, and I'm very much looking forward to the 3D gaming devices that are in production, like the Oculus Rift and the Morpheus that is being developed by Sony. I love those, you know, dreams about the future of having your own holodeck like they have in Star Trek. And it's stuff that I love to talk about on Geek Priest, my other show. But it's, again, for movies alone, it's really not something that I miss. So is it truly worth keeping that subscription? I don't know. It's a lot of money. So I've seen a couple of movies here at home. The most recent one was Finding Nemo in 3D. Now, this is an animated movie by Pixar, pretty recent. And I remember liking it the first time I saw it, but it didn't grab me as being the best Netflix movie somehow. It might be because I'm not a father, so that whole father-son relationship, I didn't relate to it emotionally that much. I know that a lot of parents did relate to this very, very much. But I watched it in 3D, actually, I've got one of those 3D televisions. And it's funny because that movie has been re-rendered. Of course, when it came out, it was in 2D, and the whole 3D, you know, the trend had to still be invented by the television industry. So they went back, and that's the big advantage of these Pixar movies, because this is all already, you know, the movie itself is a CGI movie. Everything is being calculated in 3D. The only thing you need to do is to have an output for both the left and the right eye. So it's and probably also some tweaking so that it looks good. But it was good. It looked really, really pretty, I have to say. And then the underwater scenes and those scenes in the fish tank in 3D were a lot more fun than in 2D. It made you feel like you were actually swimming in the water. I still didn't care that much for the story. I still thought that the humor was kind of muted, not as great, not as good as many other Pixar movies. They're making a sequel right now, or preparing a sequel. Not really too thrilled about that, but, you know, it's okay. It's Pixar. I still believe that, you know, Pixar is able to do great things, but sometimes I wonder if they still have that sparkle that they had with these great movies like Toy Story, like Up. Those were classics. But there are now also issuing movies that are less classic. I don't know. It's like that movie Planes. I saw that there's a sequel. This is not Pixar, but it's Disney, I think. But Planes is very much like Cars, but then with planes. I wouldn't be surprised if there were some crossovers in there as well. Just give eyes to inanimate objects, and then ultimately you will immediately have a toy line. That's basically what Planes is. So they made a sequel to Planes, and I liked the first Planes, but I felt it was exactly like Cars, just with planes. That was my review. So I hope for the second movie they can make it a little bit more exciting. And then there are other movie companies that are getting better and better, and DreamWorks, who made the whole Shrek, I don't know how many movies. At first, DreamWorks was always a bit subpar compared to Pixar, and it wasn't as funny. But you might remember my review of the movie Turbo with that slug, which I did not expect to be good at all. I saw the trailers and I thought, you know, it's for kids. But yeah, it was fun. It was well told. Again, it was like Cars, but then with slugs, racing slugs. But it's or snails. I don't know what the actually there are snails and slugs in this movie. But it was fun. It was genuinely funny. But then DreamWorks also made the horrible movie The Croods, which I really disliked, and I have no desire whatsoever to see that again. I'm waiting for the next Up or the next Toy Story. I haven't seen it yet. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is another one of those movies. Which company made that? I don't remember. But I didn't expect to like it, but it was fun, the first one. And the second one, I still have to watch it, but it was surprisingly funny. Let me look that up. Who made that? Is that also DreamWorks, or is it something completely separate? Let me see. IMDb. Who is the company? Sony Pictures. Interesting. Sony. Huh. What about that? Oh, well, anyway, if you listen to Geek Priest, I will talk a little bit more about Doctor Who. I'm now in the fifth season, so I'll give you my review of what I think of the new Doctor. Well, for me, is a new Doctor, and about that fifth season. But in order to listen to that, you have to tune in to geekpriest.sqpn.com. Let's talk some geek.
10 years ago, I didn't believe in the internet, and yet I'm downloading a chili recipe as we speak.
Computers can do that?
To start, press any key. Where's the any key? I see Esk, Katarl, and Pigup. There doesn't seem to be any key.
The summertime will be, I think, for me, from now on, always linked to writing and reading. That's what I did for many months, writing my book Geek Priest. And the summertime is a really great time for reading. I guess it's because I've got less work, or I give myself more time. That's probably it. I don't have less work. I have just the same amount of work as I always have. But it's because of the temperatures, because of the fact that a lot of people are now celebrating summer holiday. I take it easier as well, and I give myself more time. I give myself permission to read more. And perhaps I should also write. I'm going on vacation in a couple of weeks from now, and I'm thinking about, I don't know, just writing a small book again or something like that. There, I have some ideas. Anyway, but reading, and I read, of course, on my Kindle. I've got this old cheap Kindle. Well, it is still very cheap. It's the low cost model. I think it's now $69, and it has no backlight or anything, but it's incredibly tiny and handy, and I love it. The only downside is that it is that particular model that I have is still very low contrast. The screen itself is gray. It's not white. It's gray. And the letters are not exactly black, but they're kind of like dark gray. So, and I've noticed that it is nice if you can sit and read when there's a good lamp behind you or in the sunlight, but it is not good to read in bed with that particular Kindle. It's just a little bit too dark, and I notice that my eyes get tired, and I can't read at the same speed as I can in a regular book. Added to that is this doesn't have a touch screen, so there are these kind of very slim buttons on both sides of the Kindle, which are very sleek looking, but they're actually not very handy. Because I always read with one hand. I want to hold the Kindle in one hand, but then to flip the page, you have to kind of twist your thumb in a very unnatural way to kind of press that button, and the button is a bit resistant. It's just not a very nice experience. You always have to hold the thing with two hands, and then hold it in your left hand and press the button with your right hand, or vice versa. And it is, I'm a pretty fast reader, but it's distracting. There's always this moment when you have to turn the page where, I don't know. It's just mechanically not working for me. And added to that, of course, we're so used and trained now to use touch screens. And so it's just natural to just move your thumb to the screen and press the screen and then let that flip the page. And that's exactly what it does on, the iPad or on the Nexus 7. But so I'm coveting a new Kindle. The German Amazon store has the Kindle White on promotion right now. It's 30 euros off the regular price, and they've got free delivery in the Netherlands as well, because it's our neighboring country. And the Kindle Paper White, the last model, apparently has a much better contrast, and it has a touchscreen. Which for me would be, you might think, isn't that just luxury behavior? It's just about pressing a button or pressing the screen. But since I'm reading so much these days, it is this nagging thing. And every page, it takes me out of the story. So I'm thinking about getting myself a Kindle Paper White. They're still very, very cheap. Taking that on vacation and... Now, I wanted to mention this because, as you might have heard, Amazon in the United States has introduced something that might revolutionize the book market. And it is basically what Spotify currently is for music and not just Spotify, but there are other services that are similar. It's basically a flat fee subscription model where you can read as much as you want. So it is all you can read for $9.99 per month. And you can try it free for 30 days. And it works with Kindles. Now, this, of course, is for Amazon, I think, a very profitable business because it will sell Kindles, lots of Kindles. They've struck a lot of deals with publishers, not all publishers. Don't think that you get access to the entire catalog of Amazon. No, it's just the publishers that they have negotiated with and that have agreed. But there are a number of big publishers among those that signed a contract. And so you've got books like The Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, Life of Pi, that sort of stuff, The Hunger Games. So a lot of these big, you know, books are available, but there might also be a lot of your favorite books that you want to read that are not part of this deal. But still, this is pretty amazing. All you can read for just $9.99 per month. Now, that is $120 per year. Don't be mistaken. So you have to make that calculation. Do I buy books for the amount of $120 per year? If not, then it might be cheaper to just go on with your regular reading habit. But if you are a big reader, then this might actually save you a lot. Plus, it's the convenience. You never have to think about this anymore. You can just browse from your Kindle through that catalog. And if you see a book that strikes your fancy, you can just click on it and start reading it right away. Here's the really nicely done promo video that Amazon posted on its website. Watch the journey unfold, is what they say.
There is a moment in every good book as a story unfolds, or a hero rises, an adventure begins, or an idea takes hold. When you are reminded once more, this is why you love to read. Introducing Kindle Unlimited, the freedom to explore over 600,000 titles and thousands of audiobooks in the palm of your hand. Enjoy unlimited reading and unlimited listening on any device for just $9.99 a month. Your library just got a whole lot bigger. So try it free for 30 days and read on and on.
So it's a bit confusing. They also mention the unlimited listening, and this, of course, refers to their audiobook service, Audible, which they bought a couple of years ago. But I've read some reports saying that that would just be for the first 3 months included in the price. So that might actually, there might be a premium price to pay for that. But it's still pretty cool to be able to listen to audiobooks. I mean, if that would be included in the price for good, then this would certainly be a good deal. I am a very big fan of audiobooks. I can listen to it when I'm running, when I'm on the road. It is just, for me, a fantastic complement to regular book reading. Even though audiobooks, the only downside is it's slow. I mean, if you want to listen to a book, that takes about 5 or 6 times the amount of time that it would cost me to read it, because you just read much faster than you can listen. But it's a great deal. I just want to remind you that if you want to sign up for Kindle Unlimited, if you want to buy yourself a Kindle, make sure you go to sqpn.com first and click on that Amazon banner on the website. If you do that, then that will actually support SQPN. It's just a very easy, simple way to support our network and to support this show, among other shows, that won't cost you any extra. So think of that if you sign up for Kindle Unlimited. I do have an American Amazon account, in addition to my UK Amazon account and my German Amazon account. My Kindle is, because I bought it in the United States during one of the CNMCs, is linked to my American account. The only downside is that I don't think it's linked to a credit to my Dutch credit card anymore. I'd have to look that up. Otherwise, I might actually sign up for this Kindle Unlimited and just try it out. Now, the Paperwhite, the cheaper Kindle models, don't have that ability to play audiobooks. You have to keep that in mind. But then again, you have the Kindle apps on mobile devices, on the Android devices or on the iOS devices as well. So you can use that to listen to the audiobooks. I just love the Kindle because it's distraction-free reading. Well, the Paper White has a backlight, but it doesn't have that glare that you have on all these other screens and mobile devices. And that's, for me, very important. If I read, I don't want to be distracted by my own reflection in the screen or, you know, fingerprints or anything. And the Kindles are made for reading. I love them. So if I would decide to buy a Paper White, then, of course, I will review it on the next show. Speaking of writing, because not only am I an avid reader, but I can say that I'm now a published author. That is cool. It's only one book. By the way, my book was on sale in Australia. That was so funny. Adrian sent me a photo of his local Catholic bookstore, and they had my book there. Still completely surreal to see your own book on the other side of the planet, on a photo that is posted in a different time zone and appears in your, you know, it's winter there, it's summer here. It's so amazing, the world that we live in. But anyway, I've been using an app for writing that I want to recommend to all of you aspiring writers or accomplished writers. And it's for Mac. Well, actually, it's not for Mac only. It is also available for Windows, and it is the go-to app for a lot of writers. It's called Scrivener. I bought it as part of a one of those software packages of the Mac Heist things. Mac Heist was very popular even before the App Store. You would pay a fixed price, and then you would get a lot of these. You would get bundled software. And I think I picked up one of those bundles, and it had Scrivener 2, which is an improved version of Scrivener. The only downside is it is a standalone program that I downloaded from their sites. This was before the App Store or separate from the App Store, which means that if I want updates, etc., I have to go to the website, download it. I love the environment of the App Store, but if I want to have it on my App Store account, I need to purchase it again. Well, now might be actually a good moment to do that, because Apple is organizing, or iTunes is organizing, a creativity week or something like that, which means that a number of really good apps for the Mac are now half price, and Scrivener is one of them. So instead of paying $40, it will only cost you $20. And if you want to write a book, if you're just contemplating doing that, I would say go get it. Because it is an amazing program. It is totally tailor-made for writing and also for gathering your ideas. There is a huge community all over the world that uses it. So there's a lot of lots of tutorials and tips to be found. This is the perfect tool for NaNoWriMo. You know, is it in November, the month that you're challenged to write a book in 30 days or something? Scrivener is a great app, and it's half price now, so just wanted to pass it along. Just go to the App Store and look for Scrivener. I don't think it's the half price for Windows, but there might be other moments where they, you know, give you a discount on that. But the app environment in Windows is just not as good as the app environment on Mac OS X. More about Windows 9, by the way, in the next show that I'm going to record, which is Geek Priest. So all of you that are looking forward to that. And I will also tell you how to change your Macintosh into a Star Trek computer, including the sounds, you know, the little blips and beeps. But if you want to find out how, then just go to geekpriest.sqpn.com and download this week's show. Another app that I want to recommend here, this is for iOS. I'm pretty sure it will also be available for Android. It's the WeTransfer app. Now, WeTransfer is a tool, I think it's developed in the Netherlands. I use it a lot for media. It enables you to send large files via email. You know, normally in email you can only send a couple of photos, and it depends also on the server of the recipient, whether or not those big files can actually be accessed, and otherwise you get an error message. I have that all the time with my colleagues. They are, you know, even though they work in the media, their mail server is so old-fashioned that you cannot even send two photos. It will already block it. Well, WeTransfer is a great alternative. You will upload it to their server, and then they will send an email with a download link to the recipient. And it's, I think you, with the free version, you can upload up to 2 gigs, which is awesome, even for video files. Now, speed, of course, depends on your own upload speed. On their end, it's very fast. But it's a great tool. And there is now an app on mobile devices as well. And that's super handy to transfer photos or videos to your computer. If you have an iOS device or, let's say, a Nexus 5 or a Nexus 7, you cannot use those SD cards or mini SD cards to transfer material. So you always have to hook it up to a computer and do the syncing, which is a very frustrating way to transmit photos. And in my case, for instance, my iOS device is synced to my home Mac, but not to my mobile Mac, my laptop, which I take on vacation. So WeTransfer is actually a great way to transfer all these photos to my computer, or to any computer, actually. And it's, I've used it this morning to send out a lot of photos to my colleague, and it worked really, really well. So go look it up in the App Store. It's called WeTransfer. Oh, wow. I've been talking a lot. Let's talk food a little bit.
4 fried chickens and a Coke.
And some dry white toast, please.
Mm-hmm. This is a tasty burger.
Eat that?
What, that? No. Yes. No. Well, no, I crossed my mind.
On the train, on my Kindle, I read another book about plant-based food. And this is actually the best book that I've read so far. It's written by a friend of mine in the Netherlands. It's called The Plant Eater. Just like me, he doesn't like the word vegan. And in Dutch, it sounds even more scary. It sounds really extremist. So he prefers the word plant eater, because that's actually what it is. It's just, you know, you eat plant-based food. But he is, it's a great blend of both his personal testimony, how he got into eating plants and how that changed everything in his life, his health, his whole, you know, his whole outlook on the world, I guess. And actually, he's, again, one of those internet entrepreneurs. He turned this into a business. So he gives actually courses on with YouTube and everything, podcasts, email letters, to help people adapt to this plant-based lifestyle. He's very, very knowledgeable. And he's making a living out of that. But that book is very well constructed, and there was a lot of research in there that I wasn't aware of, and it made me aware of the fact that even though I switched to a plant-based diet, I wasn't really doing it in the right way. Well, you know, I was doing a lot of things already very well, but there is so much more that I should do to keep that balance and to get even healthier. And one of the things that he mentioned was the variety. You know, you really have to be very vigilant that you use all sorts of vegetables, not just the same old lettuce and the same old tomatoes. Also use spinach leaves and endives and whatnot. Just mix it up as much as you can. The more you do that, the more you will get that stable base of nutrients and vitamins and minerals and whatnot. So that was a good lesson. He also said, you know, you might be plant-based and then just continue to eat a lot of junk food, with sugar in it, with way too much salt, with all sorts of chemical additives. Well, there are no animal ingredients in there. That's what you keep telling yourself, and you keep eating junk. But he's like, you know what? You got to bite the bullet. Just go full-fledged, you know, healthy food. And your body is built with the materials that you feed it. So if you eat healthy stuff, you will be healthy. That kind of really makes sense. Now, of course, there are, and he acknowledges that there are illnesses that you can get regardless of what kind of lifestyle you live, but you can diminish the chances of getting ill, and you can enhance your ability to recover or to resist illness. And so it's a very realistic book. Another thing that I learned from this, and it didn't really strike me how do I say this? It's something that I didn't realize that much before he mentioned it. He said, you know, we're always, our whole economy is built on these animal-based ingredients. And it's true. I mean, I read labels all the time because you have to be aware what's in it. And a lot of the animal products are often hidden. You don't see it. I mean, even in macaroni or whatever prefab food, there might still be animal ingredients. Even in vegetarian food, there still might be egg whites and not. So you have to, true vegan stuff is rare. And I've become aware how omnipresent animal products are or animal ingredients are. It's just everywhere. So, then of course it's good for the economy. It's good for our farmers because that's what they live of. But this guy who wrote this book says it's actually a bit strange, isn't it, that we feed ourselves with protein coming from animals, but those animals get those proteins and those muscles and everything that makes them strong and healthy from eating plants. So why don't we skip that middle step and just eat plants ourselves? You know, if a cow can get big and strong and healthy thanks to eating, you know, vegetables, grass, why would we eat the cow? And then he also has these, you know, calculations of how much food goes into a cow, how much water is spent on animal products. And what the result is, the yield is actually very small. If we would just go immediately to the source, to the plants, then that would save our planet so much, you know, drinkable water, so much food. A lot of the surface of this planet is now dedicated to food for animals so that we can eat those animals. It just doesn't make sense. And we already know that with the current growth of our population on the planet, if everyone wanted to adapt our lifestyle, our Western lifestyle with the bacon, with the burgers and whatnot, we would need like 5 planets. This is not sustainable. That's something that we know for sure. And then I'm thinking, as a, you know, as a Christian, I'm thinking God didn't make this world just for the little group of Western consumers. He gave this planet because he knew that it would be sufficient, right? So then why do we create these big differences? And I know it's hard to change habits. It's difficult, and I have really, for me, it's a big process of discovery how much of my old eating habits were influenced by commercials, by what a lot of the stakeholders in that animal industry taught me, like milk, like that milk would be super healthy and that I cannot be healthy without milk. That's utterly rubbish. Now, scientifically proven nonsense. You don't have to drink milk. Really not. They're actually the majority of people in the world, including this huge country of China where people get very, very old. They never drink milk. Why? Because they are intolerant to lactose. Shouldn't that tell us something? That the majority of the population is allergic to milk? Then that's probably not something that we should drink. So milk is, and of course, I know a lot of you think, well, what about the calcium, etc.? Well, actually, milk is a very inefficient way to get calcium. And if you drink a lot of milk, it might actually break down the calcium. It's not for nothing that the country in the world where they drink the most milk and eat the most cheese, Holland, the Netherlands, my country, is also the country with the highest rates of osteoporosis. And that is, more and more scientists are making the link. So if you want to have a real good source of calcium, eat green-leaved vegetables, spinach, all that sort of stuff. As long as it's dark green, there's lots of calcium, and your body is much more able to use that stuff, and it's not hindered by fat and cholesterol and all that other stuff. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. You know what I think of all this. But just wanted to tell you that I'm still learning. But I'm enjoying it. And this is a nice time of the year to experiment with legumes, vegetables, salads. I'm having a field day. beans. Let's not forget beans. They're so healthy. A little bit inconvenient sometimes because of the digestive side effects. But hey, learn from the Cubans, right? Beans, it's a staple food. It should be part of your daily regimen. And if you make bean burgers or use it beans for breakfast like the British do, it's super healthy. Anyway, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. And again, if you want to hear more geek talk, then listen to my other show called Geek Priest over at geekpriest.sqpn.com. Please keep our nation in your prayers. Also, the family of all those victims that died in the plane crash in Ukraine. Pray for them, pray for their families, and I will see you soon. God bless.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.